show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Get countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast area.
Your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show. America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network, coming to you from the blue waters and sandy beaches of beautiful Southwest Florida, all around this great nation of ours, and yes, all around the world as well, on the World Wide Web. Welcome to the show today. I'm extremely happy to have all of you along with us today. We've got a lot to discuss today. Those of you that have looked at the Head On Radio Network page will see that David Swanson is going to be with us today. He's, of course, got the website afterdowningstreet.org and impeachbushcheney.org, and David, along with Cindy Sheehan and a whole group of others yesterday, were, they started a march clear from the Arlington Bridge and walked all the way down to the Capitol building, went up to John Conyers' office in the House office building, and wanted to talk to Mr. Conyers, Congressman Conyers, about the so-called impeachment that he wanted to do some time ago that he signed on to and then signed off of. And well, anyway, we'll let David explain all that a little later. He's going to be with us at the bottom of this hour around 3:30, and if you've got any questions, you can call in about that whole episode yesterday. Some of them ended up in jail for 8 or 9 hours, and I'm sure David will relate the whole story to us. Spoke to him earlier on today, and he said it was a long day yesterday, and I'm just sure it was. 866-546-5254, if you'd like to call the program today. We'd love to hear from you, as always. And if you've got some minutes to spare on your phone plan, you can call us at 941-876-6896. Love to hear from you either way. Let's just talk a minute about the YouTube debate last night. What did you think of it? Was it better than the rest? I think it was, to give you my 2 cents worth on it, I think it was better than the other debates because the questions were more sincere, more pointed, more real. After all, they were from real people rather than some of these polished journalists that and TV stars nowadays that they have, the likes of Chris Matthews and those folks, Timmy Russert. I get tired of them asking the question. So it was good to see the YouTube thing. It's interesting to me to see that whole phenomenon of YouTube catch on. The direction it's going to take, is taking politically, is going to be significant, I think, on the political landscape. We've yet to know exactly how profound the influence of YouTube will be and the internet, but as we know, and I think Howard Dean more or less got it started, his campaign back in my God, how long ago was that now? 2000, and whew, time's getting away from me, 2004. I think it's going to have a profound effect, and it's going to have a profound effect on everybody's lives, political or not, some of these days. If you're not computer literate in the next several handful of years anyway, I think you're going to be in deep doo-doo. And it's just going to have a huge effect on all of our lives. And it certainly has. Look how far it's come now. In just the last half dozen years, let's say. Look at how far along the internet has come, and the effect it's had on our society here in this country and all around the world, as a matter of fact. So, going to be interesting to see where it goes. But I did enjoy some of that last night, and I love the comment here on the Head On Radio Network chat room. Elo said it just proved how socially inept Anderson Cooper is. I heartily agree. I do. I can't stand Anderson Cooper. And again, he's another son of privilege. It seems like the relationship. You can see it more and more in the media and in Washington now. The incestuous type thing. So and so's son, so and so's daughter, cousin, brother in law, wife, whatever. It's just all nicely intermingled nowadays, and you can scarcely find anybody involved in politics that hasn't helped their family along, has, you know, their friends, and it's the same way in the media. Lots and lots and lots of people, sons, daughters, moms, dads, whatever, related to one another in that business, just kind of taking over and controlling it, and I hate to see that. Have any of you noticed the market turn? Now, I've never liked the guy. I'm talking about Tucker Carlson. Have any of you noticed since they changed their schedule around how he's just put an extra edge on himself? What an ass he's become. He talks down to everyone that he doesn't agree with, talks down to them. I thought last night he was particularly loathsome. Don't care for the guy. Really don't care for the guy at all. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to give us a call. And speaking of TV, I did have a chance while I was working on research for today's program to have C-SPAN on here in the studio most of the morning, and got to see some of it again this afternoon. The Judiciary Committee hearings with Alberto Gonzalez. Is there a more bald-faced liar on the planet than Alberto Gonzalez? Is there? The lies that he sat there and told the Senate panel today, Arlen Specter and Kennedy and Feingold and Leahy, just plain amazing. Just amazing. But then he knows that he is accountable to no one. He knows that if anything legal, any kind of legal jeopardy does befall him, that he will get off scot-free, he and anybody else in this administration. He knows that. He knows that he can do anything and get off scot-free. And so I think that's given them all brass balls, so to speak, when they go talk in front of any of the committees, because they can lie, cheat, steal. They know that they can laugh in the face of any of these committees and get away with it, and are getting away with it. And I think they'll continue to get away with it. That's my feeling anyway. I don't think there will be any impeachment. I don't think there will be any severe penalties on any of these people. And if I had to place a bet right now, and please make me be wrong on this, make me eat my words. I hope I have to. But if I had to place a bet right now on whether there will be any legal problems for anybody in this Bush administration when he goes out of office, and was it January the 20th, 2000, and what will that be? Nine, that there will be no one in legal jeopardy at that time in this Bush administration, and none of them will be held accountable. That's my bet. That's where I think this whole thing is right now. I think they're laughing at the Senate. I think they're laughing at the House. This latest little stunt of Bush's that will go ahead and file contempt charges, do anything you want. I won't let the federal court, the federal judges get involved. I have authority over all of them. I think that's another just slap in the face to the other branches of government. I'm going to reign supreme no matter what. That's what he's told everybody. And most likely, I think he's going to get away with it due to the spinelessness of the Democrats in Congress and the stupidity and stubbornness of the Republicans in Congress. But I think the crime of perjury is probably inoperative for Bush administration officials. Of course, even if they lie right to the FBI or a grand jury, much less the little old Congress, since they know they'll never see the inside of a jail cell, they're criminal benefactors. Just like in the case of Scooter Libby, they'll pay their fines. And the D.C. insiders, like your Tucker Carlson's and others, they'll defend the honor of all these crooks no matter what. It would be nice to see the rule of law come into play someplace along the line here. But so far, we're not seeing it. And, you know, the impeachment. Talk. And that's what that whole thing was yesterday with the Cindy Sheehan and David Swanson and Dave McGovern and a host of others that went down to Conyers' office. As it turns out, he's not much different than the rest of them. He talked a good game when he's running for office. Did a great job of getting everybody all riled up about impeachment, how he's going to do this and do that. And, of course, it was all of a sudden off the table. And now the guy just doesn't want to even talk about it. And it's the worst kind of cowardice. It's even worse cowardice than is held by the other people in Congress who haven't done anything about it, because at least Conyers kind of swore that he would. And now we find that he's taken full political advantage of the whole situation and probably never meant to do anything in the first place, that he's just as scared of rolling the impeachment dice as anybody else is, and all of it was just pretty much bluster. All you John Conyers fan going to hate me for saying that, but that's how I feel. And when you think about it, impeachment really is the only answer to this whole thing. It really is. And I spoke to John Dean about this the other day, and he says that impeachment is valuable because Bush, in that particular case, cannot assert his executive privilege over anything needed in an investigation against him in an impeachment. That's why this is so important. All the records on Cheney's energy policy, the Plame Wilson leak, all of it loses the cover of this White House and this administration, and it becomes the property, so to speak, of the investigating body, which would be the House. And it also means that all the people that refuse to acknowledge the subpoenas, and your Karl Roves and Harriet Myers and Condi Rice and all these people that have refused to testify, that it means that they're not going to be able to get around that anymore. And, of course, if it's brought in front of the public, and we do have impeachment hearings in the House, then the media is not going to be able to ignore it any longer. So it can happen. And if it did happen, the media would have to cover it. Bush's executive privilege would be null and void in this case. I just think that impeachment is the right way to go. It'll uncover a lot of the dirt that pervades this administration from top to bottom. So let's do it. Let's get on with it. Let's not have any more excuses from the likes of your John Conyers and formerly brave congressmen like him. They turn my beginning to turn my stomach, so many of them are. Seems like no matter where we look in the news lately, there's crime and corruption of one sort or another. And even in sports, we have so many millions of our young kids, right or wrong, but it is the case, no matter what you think of it, that so many of our kids look up to professional athletes and look to professional sports, see these people as role models, and look what we've got going on even in our sports. This deal with Michael Vick of the Atlanta Falcons and this dogfighting thing just makes me sick. And I don't know who said it the other day. Maybe it was Robert Byrd. Maybe it was John Kerry. I can't remember who said it. But I do believe the hottest places in hell are definitely reserved for people that would resort to this barbaric so-called sport of this dog fighting with these pit bulls and having dogs fight to the death. Personally, I don't know how anybody could witness that. Moreover, I don't know how anybody could possibly sanction it. They bet on it. It's a spectator sport. And if, in fact, Michael Vick is guilty of that, and for me, all I know is the evidence that they have definitely found on his property of, what was it, 30 or 40 or even more of those dogs, many of them wounded badly. That's enough. That's enough right now. And if the NFL wants to send a message that they're no longer going to put up with these kinds of people, I think to dump Michael Vick on his ass out of that sport would be a good thing. And like I said, I have particular contempt for anybody that do that with animals. It's a horrible thing. And then over in the NBA, so many people, big fans of the National Basketball Association, and here we find out that one of the referees may have been throwing games for money, might have been involved with the mafia, calling a foul here or not calling one there and influencing the outcome of a game. God, what is this country coming to? Really. Ugly. Ugly situation. 866-546-5254. We're going to pause for a break, and we'll be right back.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Are you a conservative Republican who believes George W. Bush did the right thing by invading Iraq? Are you in agreement with Mr. Bush when he says, we need to stay the course no matter how long it takes? Do you agree with the president when he says that he will never set any time schedule to pull out our troops? Well, if you agree with all that, then you'll certainly want to help out Mr. Bush by signing up your kids or grandkids for military service today. Yes, just call your local Army, Navy, Air Force, or Marine recruiter and tell them the age and social security number of your little Johnny or Susie and make an appointment for a free visit by your local military recruiter. We know that by supporting the president's war, you are a super patriot, and you'll want to be the first on your block to offer up your kids for Mr. Bush's war. Don't worry if you think they're too young. Even if they're only 10 or 11 years old, this war will certainly last long enough for them to get involved. And for the first 15 callers, we're offering absolutely free a CD of the president uttering those famous fighting words, bring 'em on. Yes, this CD will have special meaning to you, especially if your kid is wounded or killed in Iraq. So call now and get your child or grandchild registered today. Just call 1-800-TAKE-MY-KID. That's 1-800-TAKE-MY-KID.
Stars after a setting sun. You run for the money. You don't even know about wild mountain honey.
Jones.
Man, grow the tree of wholeness in this desert land. Come on, children, now learn how to run by heaven, the stars, the moon, and the sun.
All right, Give Up. Everybody know who that is? Yeah, it's the Steve Miller Band. That's right, Steve Miller Band. They're a big popular band back in the, mid to late 70s, I guess you would say. Always liked Steve Miller. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join the program. As I watched that debacle today with the Senate Judiciary Committee, Gonzalez literally sitting there laughing at him and their questions. He knows. He knows he's in the clear. All he's got to do is sit there and get this over with, and then he'll be able to walk out of there scot-free, no problem. But watching all this action going on in Washington nowadays, or inaction, depending on how you look at it, do you ever stop and think how thoroughly manipulated we the people are? I think about that once in a while. You look at an example would be to look at a freeway during rush hour in the morning and again in the afternoon too. We got to be able to afford our cars and the insurance and the maintenance and the gas it takes to keep running. And we have to have jobs. And we have to have jobs. We have to have a car. And to have a car usually means to have debt. And away we go, locking ourselves in this credit and debt cycle that usually won't let go until you die. And what makes it all the worse is that it's getting worse. We're even losing our little freedoms that mostly, they're mostly an illusion anyway, but they were things that could give us a little consolation. Now they're taking those away, too. And I don't know how many of you read Matthew Rothschild's new book, You Have No Rights, A Story of an American in an Age of Repression. But, he goes on to say the government is monitoring your phone calls and can read your emails and open your snail mail. The government can access records of your large financial transactions, such as buying a house. Law enforcement officers can burst into your home when you're not there, rifle through your belongings, plant a recording device on your computer, and leave without notifying you for at least 30 days and maybe even a lot more. And you no longer have the right to protest where the president or vice president can see you, or at any major public events when they aren't even present. Law enforcement officers can now monitor you in public if you're merely exercising your political right. They can infiltrate your political organizations, and they can keep track of you at your place of worship. The government can find out from bookstores and libraries the material you've been reading, and the bookstore owner and the librarian can't talk about it except to their lawyers for a whole year or more. Think about what has gone on. The government can hold you in preventative detention. I love that saying. Preventative detention for months on end as a quote, material witness. And if you're not a citizen, the government can deport you on a technicality for mere political association. And if you're not a citizen, the government can label you as an enemy combatant and send you to secret prisons around the world where you may never see the light of day again, much less a lawyer or a judge. And even if you are a citizen, the government can label you as an enemy combatant and hold you in solitary confinement here in the United States. And under George W. Bush's interpretation of the president's powers during the so-called war on terror, he can do just about whatever he wants. And we're clearly at a turning point here in the United States, and our choices are really very, very clear. We either continue to pretend that everything's fine, that our government and our leaders couldn't possibly be up to such dastardly business, and like the frog, stay in the water until it finally boils, or we can take matters into our own hands and reclaim this country that our founders bequeathed to us. But the thing is, folks, time is running out. It is running out. Let's head on over to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. This is Juanita.
Hi, Juanita.
Can I just say a little something about impeachment?
Sure.
If they're not going to do impeachment for these people, then why do we even have it on the law books or whatever?
No, you're right. If they don't do it now, it should now forevermore be something that not even considered.
I know. If it doesn't apply to them, I mean, who would it apply to?
No, I can't imagine. Even Richard Nixon's, they were going to impeach Richard Nixon. He was a choir boy next to these people.
That's right. That's pretty much what I wanted to say.
All right. Thanks, Juanita. Good
okay,
to hear
bye-bye.
From you.
Okay, bye-bye.
If not now, then when? Impeachment is on the books. It's something that's rarely been tried here in this country, and that's a good thing. I don't particularly think that we want to start. I don't think we want to arrive at a point here in this country where every time a president does something we don't like that we're threatening with impeachment. That's not the point here. That's not the point at all. It's only when one president and his administration gets totally out of control, a rogue presidency, as it were, which is exactly what we're facing right now. That is when you use impeachment. When the president no longer does, when a president laughs, scoffs at the will of the people, such as this president does, when his entire administration is dedicated to secrecy and keeping things that the public has the right to know, keeping those things from the American public, then impeachment is the answer. I don't want to get into a cycle where we impeach this guy and then when Republican power, well, they'll impeach our guy back and forth and back and forth. This has got nothing to do. You know, people say, well, it's about getting even. No, it is not. It has nothing to do with Bill Clinton. Nothing. Yes, that was a dastardly act that they pulled. Yes, that was totally unnecessary for them to impeach him over what they tried to get him for. That was ridiculous. It was a frivolous use of impeachment. But now we're faced with an administration that is totally out of control, that does almost everything they do is contrary to what's good for the American people. They openly flaunt the law. They openly flaunt their use of executive privilege. They openly flaunt their use of secrecy to keep things from the American public that the American public should know, and things that if the American public did know, these people know that they'd probably be a march on the White House and drag their asses out of there. It's an ugly political world we're faced with right now. Extremely, extremely ugly. And I don't know if we're going to get to the bottom of it or not. I really don't. Hey, we're going to pause for a quick break, get a hold of our guest, David Swanson, and we'll be right back. Back with you here in the Guy James Show. And, hey, I want to thank everybody for being with us here this afternoon. I see we've got a very good audience today. And I knew we would because everybody knows who our next guest coming up is. And it's David Swanson. David, welcome to the show.
Great to be here, as always.
Well, kind of a quiet day for you today.
Well,
as opposed to yesterday.
Having spent 8 or 9 hours in a jail staring at a wall yesterday, there were some quiet times, but prior to that was quite exciting.
Tell me something. Having not had that experience, were you in solitary? Did you have people with you in your cell? Where'd you go and how'd they treat you and all?
Well, this was the United States Capitol Police.
Yeah.
They treated us much better than they have treated people before, and extremely pleasantly and decently as jails go. And we were all kept together in a large gymnasium type room. My only complaint is that it took them 8 or 9 hours to do 20 minutes worth of work processing us, which of course they do intentionally, because if you got out in 20 minutes. You'd start saying, "Hey, let's do that tomorrow."
Yeah,
and so it'll be a few days before we're ready to do it again. But I think it was probably the first time in close to 40 years that Congressman Conyers has been on the receiving end of that sort of protest, and it may cause him to do a little thinking.
Do you think? Do you think it will?
I am hopeful. I don't think he's going to announce tomorrow that he's had a change of heart. I think we're going to have to keep pushing and not get discouraged, and we're going to have to bring other Congress members around, and we're going to have to try to bring Nancy Pelosi around. But I think other factors, in addition to our activism, will be helping as we go, and I think our best allies in this are Bush and Cheney themselves, because they keep throwing out laws and asserting new powers, and sooner or later, Congress is going to get mad about it.
Well, I mentioned what went on yesterday to a friend of mine who's, I don't know, I want to say he's on the political right, maybe slightly to the right. And he looked at me and he said, I told him that, some of you were arrested and that the Conyers people weren't all that happy with what went on and everything. He said, "Well, what did you expect? What did you expect yesterday, David? What did you expect to come of this? Did you think you were going to march down there and Conyers would receive you with open arms and say, 'Hey, come on in, let's talk'? What did you really expect yesterday?"
I expected to go to jail. I did not expect to have impeachment happen, but I did expect Congressman Conyers to play it a little more smoothly. I expected him to make a substantial proposal along the lines of censure or contempt or a special new investigation or some such nonsense short of impeachment. Instead, he walked in apparently oblivious to the fact that there's a public movement out there demanding impeachment, quite unaware that we were planning a sit-in as opposed to a friendly meeting, and he walks in proposing, why not have a town hall discussion and talk this issue over, maybe in August? And of course, we've been doing those for years, and he used to come speak at them. Now he doesn't even do that. We had one in May in Detroit he was supposed to speak at. He came before it started and left before it started. And so the discussion between Congressman Conyers and Cindy Sheehan, Ray McGovern, and Reverend Lennox Yearwood was quite heated. Cindy Sheehan walking out at one point, Congressman Conyers jumping up and shoving his chair across the room at one point. There was quite a gap between "we need impeachment" and "I'm Chairman Conyers. I have a great history. I've done many great things. Don't you dare tell me a word." And so it was quite a difficult situation.
Well, these are not exactly violent people. Cindy Sheehan and Ray, I know Ray McGovern and all. A heated discussion. I mean, how heated did it get?
Well, no, nothing violent.
Yeah.
No shouting that was heard outside the room, because I was outside the room, but more direct questions than the congressman is used to, I think. And for friends of his and activists he's long been aware of to tell him, "Look, the time is up. We need you to move on this now," I think highly offended him. But the people continuing to die every day and him aware of it, more aware of it than anyone else, was offending us. And when Cindy Sheehan came out at the end and said, look, Congressman Conyers said, we've got elections. That's our recourse. We can use elections. You heard the moans and groans up and down the hallway. There were hundreds of people lining the hallways. And then when Cindy said she was going to run against Nancy Pelosi, everyone cheered, of course. But I think, you know, there was nothing remotely approaching violence, and everyone still left with, you know, with the respect they've always had for Congressman Conyers, but it's going to be, I think, seriously diminished if he doesn't act on this issue at this time.
Well, does Conyers have the attitude now, do you think? I mean, I know that he's got a strong will. Most people in Congress do. Is he going to look at the organization now and the activists and go, well, you know, you guys crossed me, so I'm not going to have anything to do with you? Or will he actually feel some political heat over it? And the important thing is, will he feel any political heat in his district? Because that's what matters most to him, I'm sure.
Well, there was a simultaneous sit-in in his district. He had to interrupt the conversation to be on the phone to his district office because there were people sitting in his district office in Detroit. They're putting up billboards in Detroit asking him to impeach. They've, you know, the meeting back in May with 400 people where he came early and left before it started was in Detroit. His district wants impeachment. His wife, who sits on the Detroit City Council, introduced a resolution demanding impeachment, passed unanimously. I don't know what he hears at home from his wife.
Mm.
He's going to need to feel a lot of more heat from a lot more of his colleagues. We need more than 14 Congress members pushing him. We need 50 or 80 or 100 Congress members pushing him, and that's what we're going to have to get to. I think we're going to be helped by events, by him running into brick wall after brick wall with subpoenas and contempt citations, but we are going to have to keep pushing.
You would think he couldn't have been surprised by a lot of this yesterday, could he? I mean, I know his office has been inundated with calls and faxes. This couldn't have been a huge surprise to him, could it?
No, we've heard from his staffers for a long time that their office gets flooded with phone calls on impeachment, and he's known what was out there. You know, he himself has gone on the Sunday talk shows and cited the poll figures, you know, the majority that wants Dick Cheney impeached, 54% yes, 40% no, and close to that for Bush. He knows what's out there. On Friday, he was in San Diego and at an event organized by Progressive Democrats of America, and everyone was demanding impeachment, and he was doing his usual schizophrenic tease where he says he's not for impeachment and he is for impeachment. And he made comments that we have on video saying, if it will get three more Congress members to come to me in support of impeachment, and then I'll be able to do it. And I want to get, what are we waiting for? Let's get rid of those two guys, you know, and these sorts of comments. And so he's not unaware that the public is demanding it. He's unaware that we're really willing to really challenge him to break, you know, the politeness screen and actually oppose him in any way. And so I think that was what was surprising.
And probably surprising to the media and to a lot of activists around the country, because if there's been anybody who has been a friend, let's say, of activists who are seeking to do something about this administration, it has been John Conyers. At least he talked a good game.
Well, he's been one of the best Congress members for many years. He's been the conscience of the Congress and of the Black Caucus, and the Black Caucus used to be a lot better organization than it is now, and he was a big part of that. You know, in 2005 and 2006, he was pushing for impeachment. He literally has written the book on Bush and Cheney's crimes, documenting the specific felonies at great length, and encouraging people. And it's going to be hard for him for the next year and a half to play that game of the leading Democrat trying for impeachment while he's not trying for impeachment. And so I think it's good to have this confrontation and get straight Which is it, Congressman, yes or no? And then know what we have to do to move him. I mean, it's similar to what they're doing on the war. They want to spend the next year and a half pretending to try to end the war and then say, well, we could never override a veto. You're going to have to elect more Democrats. Where all they have to do to end the war is not bring up any more bills to fund the war, right? But they don't want to talk about that. And so with impeachment, they want to do censure, they want to do contempt, et cetera, but they don't want to be faced with yes or no on impeachment.
Exactly. And the time, in I know in your mind, in my mind, and many of us who feel strongly about the war and this issue of impeachment, well, they're inexorably tied together, but the time for the rhetoric's over. It's time now for some action. We've had all these hearings. It's time to put up or shut up. And I think they must be. Do you think John Conyers has been heavily swayed, and if so, how so, by the party leadership, by the Nancy Pelosi's and Steny Hoyer's and so forth? If they've gotten to him, how and why?
Well, in the past, in small and private meetings, he has referred to Pelosi as a big factor. Yesterday, he did not. He declined to say it was Pelosi. He said he agreed with her. It was as much him as her. So to take him at his word, it's not strictly Pelosi. That being said, if Pelosi were pushing for impeachment, it's very hard to believe that John Conyers' better half wouldn't go along with her, and that the Democrats wouldn't. I mean, she has demonstrated that she can bribe and threaten and cajole the Democrats into voting almost as a bloc on something they don't want, like funding the occupation of Iraq. She could certainly do so on impeachment. And the fact that the vote in the Senate to acquit or convict is less certain ought not to play any role in whether the House moves forward with impeachment. And it's hard even to see the electoral downside. I mean, I really think the Democrats are going to hurt themselves in the elections a year and a half from now if they hold off. But that's the only reason they are holding off.
You see that? I see that? All of my listeners see that? What is it that we're missing somewhere, do you think? I mean, it just seems, it's just the straight-up deal is, hey, let's shut up and do something now. The public wants this. We see the polls. We all seem to know that, but it's almost impossible to understand why they don't go ahead with it.
You know, there were fewer than 4%, fewer than 5% of Americans who ever thought they would vote for Bush or Kerry and switched to the other one, right? 5%, that's the swing voters. But that's all the Democratic strategists, all their staffers, all their consultants ever talk about. And so they are completely focused on winning the votes of Republicans and swing voters. And they're afraid that bringing up impeachment would stiffen the spines of the Republicans, that would rally Republicans to the defense of Bush and Cheney, which is absurd. You bring out the crimes of people, crimes that are not partisan in any way, that go to the whole question of the rule of law and abuse of power, and you don't strengthen their support. But that's what they're afraid of, and they're afraid, as Congressman Conyers told us yesterday, of being attacked on Fox News and the rest of the television outlets. So here's the Democratic chairman of the Judiciary Committee basing his decisions on what a Republican cable television station would think.
I hate that comment. I really hate that comment. David, we got a caller that has a question for you, I think. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show. Whoops.
Hi, Guy. Whoops. It's Dave.
Whoops. Tell you what I did. I just cut David off, and I'm going to – here we are, live radio again. Going to get Dave back on the phone right away. Yes, indeedy. You'd think I'd know how to run these buttons by now. Hi, David. Accidentally cut you off. I'm sorry about that. That's what I get for having an idiot run the board today, me. Anyway, we're back. Do these people not learn from history?
Apparently not.
I mean, how many Republicans backed Richard Nixon when, you know, it wasn't, you know, what you're saying right now is they're afraid that they're going to bring the Republicans to ire and have them all come out and vote against the Democrats just because we did this to George Bush. They don't like him either.
Republicans have to get elected too.
Yeah, it's hard to understand. It really is hard to understand. I'm going to try this again here now. And hi, you're on the Guy James Show. Do you have a question for David?
Yes, you pushed the right button, I think, that time.
I think we have it.
Dave and Guy, the only way that this makes sense to me, that this computes, is too many members of our Congress have accepted big bucks from big corporate special interests that are profiting from the war, profiting from having the Bush administration in place there acting on their behalf, and too many congressmen that have accepted so much are saying, how do you want me to vote on this? And I fear that's what's happening. The big special interests, the Apex and the Halliburton's, Bechtel's, that's been putting money in the pockets of too many Congress members. That's my view of it.
Well, I certainly think that that's a huge factor in the problem with trying to end the occupation of Iraq. And I think that may be part of why there are only 14 Congress members on articles of impeachment that are directly tied to the war. But if you had articles of impeachment on refusal to comply with subpoenas or on signing statements overturning laws passed by the legislative branch of our government or on the outing of a CIA agent and so on, I mean, you could have a dozen articles of impeachment that are only very tangentially connected to the war and the corporate profits of the war. I think you could get more Congress members on, not enough to move today, but more. And so I think just the general corporate friendliness of Bush and Cheney, I don't think is a sufficient explanation. I think the Democrats' strategists actually believe it will benefit the Democratic Party and hurt the Republican Party for them to play cowards now.
Hard to imagine that kind of political cowardice. But thanks for your call, Dave. Good to hear
Thank
from you.
Guys.
You made a comment yesterday, David. I think you made the comment today. I jotted this down someplace here. Was it? Oh, okay. You're protesting, and I wanted your explanation for this. I'm not sure exactly what you meant by this. About 47 of us spent 8 or 9 hours yesterday in jail for protesting a man who, at least when he, and this is the part, curious part to me, at least when he woke up yesterday morning, only thought of himself as on the side of those who protest power. What did you mean by that exactly?
Well, I mean that Chairman Conyers sees himself as part of the civil rights movement, as the congressman in whose office Rosa Parks worked for years, as the congressman who at yesterday's meeting quoted Martin Luther King at us. I mean, he has long been one of the best friends in Congress to poor people's movements, to the labor movement, to advocacy for justice and for peace. He was there for Nixon's impeachment. He signed on at one point for Reagan's impeachment. He's been someone willing to speak out and challenge the powerful. And as far as I know, unlike some Congress members, is not used to having his office the location for protest. And it showed. His staffers had no idea what to do. We were able, after many hours of holding our own press conferences in their office, to file people in and have them sit down and get arrested by the dozens. And they clearly didn't have any experience with that.
What was the straw that broke the camel's back yesterday that finally sparked the arrest? Was it inevitable that that was going to happen, or was there something that they finally said, all right, that's enough, get out, or we're going to have you arrested? How did they go?
Well, rather than sitting in his office right away, we lined hundreds of people up and down both sides of the hallway, and the Capitol Police kept the middle of the hallway clear so people could get around.
And which building were you in, for everybody?
In the Rayburn.
In the Rayburn, okay.
Building on the fourth floor where the congressman's office is. And we sent three people in to talk things over. And if they had come out, and said, look, he's ready to start moving on impeachment, we would have thanked him and cheered and gone home. But they didn't. They said he's not going anywhere. And so then at that point, we, as many people as would fit, and many more wanted to and had to sit down in the hallway and get arrested, went into his office and sat down. And we chanted. We didn't just sit quietly. And if I recall, the chant primarily was, hey, Conyers want a reason. What were the four things? War, spying, torture, treason. You know, and these sorts of chants. And so not only could they not use their phones all day, not use their fax machine all day, had their hallway full of people all day, but now we're sitting in their office chanting. So they pretty quickly got us arrested.
That sounds like a good lesson for them. We've got another call here, David. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show. Do you have a question for David?
I do. Hi, Guy. Hi, David.
Phil
in Daytona Beach.
Hey.
I think that you know, you mentioned Conyers as being a friend and, you know, to the people and all that. I really think, you know, I've been saying this for months, and Guy will tell you, you know, we got to have an attitude of, hey, you work for us. You know what I mean? I think the people have been conditioned to treat these representatives like there's some kind of royalty or something. Yeah, there are employees, you know. And anyway, just wanted to throw that out. And I'll shut up now.
Well, I agree 100%. They are public servants, and we are the public. And this is healthy. This is democracy. The people should tell their representatives what they want them to do. And you don't need to be hard feelings about the matter. But it is something we always have to be reminded of. And there are too many.
But they have to be reminded, David. I mean,
yes.
You know, that's my point. I think. You know, it's not our right to tell them what we want. You know, it's kind of like Fox News always throws that ridiculous comment, you have a right to your opinion. You know, that BS. I mean, I think we got to tell them in a stronger voice, I guess, that, look, you work for us, and remind them that in those words.
Well, don't you think, David and Phil, don't you think that yesterday might have been a wake-up call to a lot of congressmen that they said, wait a minute, if they'll go talk to John Conyers like this and go to his office like this, maybe we better sit up and listen, maybe we better take them seriously? Do you think that might be a result of this?
Well, I think so, and the follow-up with Cindy Sheehan announcing to run against Pelosi, and as you mentioned earlier in the show, Guy, they all have to win their own congressional seat back home, you know, or they're out of the game, regardless of how powerful they are when they're in Washington.
That's right.
And if we can find people to run against these creeps, you know, That was a good 1-2 punch.
David, I see that, thanks for your call, Phil. Good to hear from you.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. Thanks,
David. Phil.
I see you're going to be back at it Thursday and Friday of this week. Members of ImpeachForPeace.org, World Can't Wait, and After Downing Street are going to meet to discuss impeachment with Congress members Maxine Waters and Keith Ellison, and with the offices of Gerald Nadler, Adam Schiff, Robert Wexner, and Debbie Wasserman Schultz. First of all, how in the world are you going to find any congressmen on Friday? And so you're going to go at this from another angle on Thursday and Friday.
We are, yeah. Impeach for Peace is one of the many good impeachment groups around the country, and they've been collecting petitions from towns around the country and have set up these visits. And so we'll be going. And Congresswoman Waters has been the most outspoken, other than Congressman Dennis Kucinich, who introduced the one bill that's been introduced. Maxine Waters has been our best ally thus far, but she's not she's not doing everything she could. She's not actively lobbying her colleagues or the Out of Iraq caucus to sign on, and neither is Keith Ellison. But these are two members of the Black Caucus and of the Judiciary Committee. These are key allies, and if we can bring more Judiciary Committee members on and more allies of John Conyers in Congress on, it will help tremendously. So we really need to hear where they're coming from and let them know what we're looking for.
Well, it's something that has to be done. It must be done. Like one of our callers said earlier today, if impeachment doesn't come about for this administration, why have it on the books anymore? It would seem to me that if not now, then not ever. These people richly deserve to be impeached. The whole ugly mess needs to be tried in front of the American public, so even those that have sat by with the apathy that takes place in this country over politics, I think if there were impeachment hearings, there's a lot that would come out that average Joe, who normally doesn't participate in the political arena, might go, oh my God, I didn't know this was going on.
Yeah, I think that's right, and I think the majority that may want Dick Cheney impeached now would be a huge majority once things got going and got on television and impeachment was happening. You know, 76% of Democrats want Cheney impeached. It would be 86% the day after Chairman Conyers announced they were going to begin impeachment hearings. And getting that information out there and on television sets, it would be great ratings for the media companies, and it would educate some of that 20 to 30% that doesn't understand anything about what's going on in this country, and that would be very, very useful.
And once again, and I know it's with you. We've discussed this before, and others involved in this. This is not any type of a get even thing. I wanted George Bush to be a good president. I from the bottom of my soul, I wanted him to be a good president when he was elected. I didn't want him to be our president, but once he was elected, you know, Godspeed, be a good president. This has got nothing to do with getting even. This has got to do with making things right with the American public.
That's right, and I wanted Bill Clinton impeached, not for his sex life. I couldn't care less. I think it's disgraceful. I think it damages our constitutional system, but for some of his serious abuses. But now, I would take him back in a heartbeat. Now I would dig up Richard Nixon and sit him in that chair and prop him up. Any previous president's crimes and abuses pale in comparison to what we're up against now, which is the complete elimination of checks and balances. This is operating completely outside the rule of law. And so I think we really have a choice right now of impeachment, restoration of a rule of law and some semblance of honest elections and probably democratic victories to go along, or no action and probably Republican victories and the continued deterioration of any rights and checks and balances in this country. So I don't think it's a choice between electing Hillary Clinton and whatever it is we think she would bring us or impeachment. I think the two go together.
It's right and wrong. That's all there is to it. David, your website, you want to give them a plug here for a second?
AfterDowningStreet.org is the one I work on the most, and if that's too hard to spell, ImpeachCheney.org is a good one, too.
Hey, David Swanson, thanks so much for being our guest on the Guy James Show today. I really appreciate it, and we'll stay in touch. We'll have you back.
My pleasure. Thank you, Guy.
Thank you. David Swanson, always a pleasure to have him on. Terrific guy. In person, he's not just a political activist, but he's just a great human being, and a pleasure to talk to always when we see him in Washington and so forth. Well, we've gone a little bit past time for the news here, but we've had our trusty recorder going here, so we're going to do it for you anyway. We're going to break for the top of the hour news here on the Guy James Show. We trust you'll stay with us for the second hour of the program, and we're going to do that right after the news.
Top of the hour news brought to you by INN World Report.
In Afghanistan, the kidnapping of 23 South Korean aid workers last week brought to 60 the number of people abducted in one Afghan province since April. The insurgency has blossomed in provinces bordering Pakistan, where the Taliban received wide support. Afghanistan's gross domestic product is up by 66%. The achievement comes as a result of the largest ever opium harvest. According to a report by Craig Murray, the four largest players in the heroin business are all senior members of the Afghan government. In Turkey, analysts say the immediate impetus for an invasion of northern Iraq has receded. Turkey has more than 100,000 troops on the border and has been pushing to invade Iraq for months. But the military needs parliamentary permission to cross into Iraq, and Turkey's Kurdish Nationalist Party opposes an invasion.
For more breaking news and exclusive interviews, go to our website, innworldreport.net.
Bush administration officials unveiled a bold new assertion of executive authority Thursday in the dispute over the firing of nine U.S. attorneys. The Bush officials said the Justice Department will never be allowed to pursue contempt charges against White House officials once the president has invoked executive privilege. The position presents serious legal and political obstacles for congressional Democrats who have begun laying the groundwork for contempt proceedings against current and former White House officials. Mark Rozelle, a professor of public policy at George Mason University, said, "What this statement is saying is the president's claim of executive privilege trumps all." Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid called it an outrageous abuse of executive privilege, adding, "The White House must stop stonewalling and start being accountable to Congress and the American people. No one, including Bush, is above the law."
National Intelligence Director Mike McConnell, in a televised interview, defended a new order from George Bush that broadly outlines the limits of how suspects may be questioned in the CIA's terror interrogation program. McConnell, the nation's spy chief, would not identify what CIA interrogators are allowed to do in getting information from suspects, but tried to assure critics that torture is not used. The executive order bans torture, cruel and inhumane treatment, sexual abuse, acts intended to denigrate a religion, or other degradation beyond the bounds of human decency.
Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, do you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Get countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you've read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Thank you, everybody, for Staying with us through the news, we got another old 52 and some odd seconds left of the show today, and we hope you'll stay with us from now until the end of the show. We've got a lot to talk about, and we encourage you to join us and get your thoughts across as well at 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. I want to thank David Swanson for being with us again today. I always enjoy talking. I just want to finish up a thought from David and something he wrote today on his afterdowningstreet.org. He said, "Now is the moment for every member of Congress to take a stand for justice. Which side are you on, John? Your legacy, Chairman Conyers, is about to be remade by the American people, and all the good and noble things you have done will be overshadowed by your grand finale, the enabling of fascism in our country." Thank you for that, David. It's a great piece. You can all read that at afterdowningstreet.org. I trust you'll want to see the rest of it. But right on the money, as always. And, you know, I haven't seen a high school American history book for quite a while now. Not for probably 20 years, I suspect. But I'll bet you one thing. I'll bet you they need to be rewritten. Because I seem to remember something in them about three co-equal branches of government that were, you know, the ideas, an idea that was thought up by our founding fathers. And it seems those fellows thought it would be a good idea that if one of the branches of government got out of control, the other two would bring it back to normal again. What do you do? If you're the editor of American history books right now, do you print the actual history of what the founding fathers intended concerning the three co-equal branches of government? Or do you print this new revised history? The history where the Bush administration is slowly but absolutely surely dismantling the other branches of government so as to consolidate all of the governing power in the White House and therefore implement any law, any policy, any governmental action, no matter how illegal, no matter how detrimental to our democracy, no matter the ill effects it has on our country, none of that matters as long as the ruling elite have the power to do things their way, thus rewarding their friends with huge portions of money and power. And I don't know if you've considered it this way or not. I have, and I know, I'm sure many of you have. We have a new monarchy taking shape. And the inalienable rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness be damned. One only has to look at recent actions by this administration to see that all that is missing are the throne and the crown for this to be deemed the rule of George II. You know it's true. Equality. The primary foundation of our Constitution has been casually cast aside by this administration. And the abuses by this group of neocons and evangelical fascists are very well documented. And we mentioned Nixon a little while ago. You know, after the crimes of the Nixon administration were discovered and publicized, our legislative and judicial branches of government gradually recovered their authority as the nation and our governmental leaders came to recognize the danger that was posed by such abuses of power that were demonstrated so richly by Nixon's almost Capone-like gang. But then after carefully laying the groundwork for it, the junior Bush army pulled off a coup d'etat with the help of his brother, another crook of the highest order. And then due to negligence arising from just plain incompetence, call it what you will, incompetence, sloth, indifference. We were attacked by a bunch of amateur terrorists after having sufficient warning by our intelligence sources. And just like in the writings of the Progress for a New American Century group, we faced what they'd wished for all along, another Pearl Harbor-like event, in the exact words they said, another Pearl Harbor-like event, which gave this immoral and very illegal administration all the reason they needed to institute tighter and tighter controls over the citizens of this country to the point where they now have almost complete carte blanche to do anything they please, commit any illegal act, and flaunt the law with impunity. And this all happened. It all happened with a wink and a nod from a puppy dog compliant Congress, who, because of carefully indoctrinating the voters with huge doses of political propaganda and fear-mongering, were willing, they were able, to give this administration everything and anything they asked for in the way of more power, all in the name of fear. Never before in American history has any administration ginned up more fear. Fear of anything and everything they claim that we should be afraid of. Trust us, we'll protect you. Give us all the authority we ask for, and we'll make sure that you and your family don't have to suffer the horrors of 9/11 in your neighborhood. Doesn't matter whether you live in Manhattan, Bismarck, North Dakota, or Ten Sleep, Wyoming. We'll keep you safe and secure. Trust us. Sure, we'll have to trample on the rights of a few people and ignore a few laws, but we'll keep you safe. Trust us. Give us the power. Concede everything over to us. We'll take good care of you. And just one example, the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution. The protection against unlawful searches and seizures. All of a sudden it became obsolete, irrelevant. Illegal wiretaps took place. And not just of the so-called bad guys. What does one have to be accused of by this government to qualify as a bad guy? Speaking out against them? Whose phones are being tapped? We have no idea. It could be yours. It could be mine. They took the FISA court and threw it out the window. And you take the recent ruling in the federal court where a case was thrown out because those who brought it couldn't prove they'd actually been wiretapped. Why couldn't they prove it as suspected? Because they could not find out from the Bush administration who's being wiretapped and who isn't. And all of this is under the guise of national security. The First Amendment was suddenly the sole property of everyone who agreed with the Junior Bush administration. Oh, yes. Say what you wish as long as you're with us. You know, these scoundrels in the White House accused anyone who spoke out against their oppressive rule as being unpatriotic or, I really love their words, quoting them, aiding the enemy. How many times did you hear that? And the Fifth Amendment was ignored as well. The absolute right that we've always had to due process and legal counsel. One of the foundation blocks of our entire civilization. And now this Junior Bush cabal comes along and claims that whomever they deem are the bad guys, well, they have no rights. They're enemy combatants. They're enemy combatants and they have no legal rights in this country? In this country? Somebody tell me, since when has that ever been a policy in our democracy? Ever. Equal justice under the law doesn't matter anymore. Not to these people. And when you stop and think about it, one of the most grievous things of this entire matter, through this entire time, this president attached his favorite pet, the signing statement, to literally thousands of pieces of legislation. Either negating portions of actually duly enacted bills, or adding his own special legislative material. At will. You stop and think about that. The line item veto has been ruled unconstitutional. Unconstitutional. But Bush says, who needs that when you make up the rules all on your own? And even probably the most disconcerting, disappointing part of all of this to me is, despite a change in Congress in November, the people spoke. With all these hearings and subpoenas and testimony and undisputed evidence that Bush acts more like a king than a president of a Jeffersonian democracy, Our ruler ruled, the decider decided. Scooter Libby shall not serve any time in prison for obstruction of justice and perjury. And of government, actually the final branch has fallen. The judiciary can't even check, nor can it balance this, what can only be called insatiable executive power grab that is the Bush and Cheney administration. Oddly enough, Bush's commutation of Scooter Libby's sentence is one of the few things that he's done that's actually legal. Given that, it was no surprise, I think, to anyone, certainly wasn't to me, that when White House Press Secretary Tony Snowball said told reporters that the Justice Department and Alberto Gonzalez were not consulted in the decision, that wasn't a surprise. And his actions on that were absolutely, positively undeniable. They were legal under the Constitution. Whether or not he should have done it's a completely different matter, especially when it involves somebody that led right to his front door. So, you know, I think the constitutional infractions by this administration are far too numerous to count. There are so many that I didn't mention. Can't even think of them right now. There are so many. But it's not unreasonable to assume that there are so many still that we don't know about. You know, if we know the ones we do know, I'm talking Don Rumsfeld language here, we know what we know, and we don't know what we don't know. How many things out there are yet to be found out that they've kept secret from us with their penchant for secrecy? How many things don't we know yet? Scares me. In the wake of this final straw, the last vestiges of any idea of equality under the law, which has been absolutely squelched by these people, when this country has strayed so far from the ideals that the great minds of Washington and Hamilton and Monroe and like-minded men sought. It's time, Mr. President. It's time, Mr. Vice President. Your damage is done. You don't deserve a chance to do any more damage to this great nation. If you're any kind of men at all, knowing how the public feels about you, knowing the public sentiment now, and knowing in your heart of hearts the damage you've done to this country, if you're any kind of men at all, you'd walk away and leave those offices to better men. But we all know that's folly. You're not going to, because you're not decent men, and you don't know right from wrong. You will never do what's right for this country, only what's right for you and your cronies and the demented group that still sticks by you come hell or high water. This country deserves better. It deserves a great deal better. But I have the sick feeling we're not going to get any better. For, what is it, 18, 17 months? Not sure how long it is exactly. It's a shame. We're going to pause for a break. We'll be back.
Come on, the peace train. Is peace train a hope? what do you think tribal sovereignty means in the 21st century, and how do we resolve conflicts between tribes and the federal and state governments?
Yeah. Tribal sovereignty means that it's sovereign. You've been given sovereignty, and you're viewed as a sovereign entity, and therefore the relationship between the federal government and tribes is one between sovereign entities.
What are you, on dope?
We think so too. Call Guy James now, 1-866-546-5254.
What are you, on dope? Oh, one would certainly think so, wouldn't one? Ah, yes. When you hear that man give a speech, don't you automatically think he's, first of all, inebriated in some fashion? Certainly. Reminds me of the old Foster Brooks. Anybody you remember Foster Brooks? Foster could carry on a... And Crazy Guggenheim. But Craze wasn't drunk. He was just being crazy. Ah, yes, Foster Brooks. That's what Bush reminds me of. Only Foster was intelligent. Bush is a simpleton when he talks. You know, I was so disappointed to hear this today.
Well, I think the American people want us to continue doing our job. We're going to continue to do that. The House of Representatives, where impeachment starts, it's not my responsibility. We'll take a look at it. But at this stage, it's not something that I think that we need to do. There are many other things that we need to take a look at first. We'll wait for the House, what they decide to do.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, Harry. Well, what is it? If impeachment isn't something you think that they ought to do, if it's not up to you, it's up to the House. You don't think you could put in a good word for it, Harry? There are many other things. Isn't that typical political talk? Oh, we've got a lot of things to do to serve the people. I don't want to answer your question. I don't want to get down to brass tacks here. I don't want to mention specifics, because we've got a lot of work to do for the people. Harry, most important work you could possibly do for the people of this country is to initiate some sort of action against this Bush administration. And show some guts for a change. It's no secret by now to anyone who listens to this program that I am not enamored of Harry Reid as the Senate Majority Leader. I think there are two or three dozen senators that could do a much better job than he. I have never approved of Harry Reid. I get criticized for talking about it. I get criticized by my friends who are Democrats. I can't help it. The guy's been totally ineffectual tell me something Harry Reid has done. Not the talk, not the rhetoric, not I'm going to do this and we got to pick our fights and all that kind. Tell me something concrete Harry Reid has done. Tell me one of the battles he has won against this administration. Tell me one. God, I hate to talk that way about a fellow Democrat. And I am a Democrat, in case you're wondering. In case you did wonder. Just makes me sick when I hear him talk about that. It really does. Have you noticed on the news in the past few days how the administration is preparing us? Yes, how they're putting the grease on the skids, how they're getting everybody all lubed up. Because it's coming, folks. They're going to be telling us here before long. Not asking us. Not requesting. They're going to be telling us, despite the 70% disapproval of the war, they're going to be telling us that it's going to go on. And they're going to be telling us that this surge, mark my word, the surge is going to have to go on for a while, folks. Now they're talking next year. And so now, just as most of us thought, just as I and many of you predicted, and I might add right on time, the administration trots out General Odianero to hold his little press conference at the Pentagon last week and tell a few busloads of our Congress critters that it's going to take a little more time to determine whether or not the surge is working. They just can't evaluate the program by the September deadline they originally set for themselves. They promoted this surge. They backed it to the hilt. They told us how many troops they wanted. They told us they could give us an honest assessment of their progress by September. Did they not? And now? Now they say they can't do it. Now, I'm not condemning them for not being able to meet some deadline set by an unreasonable Congress. I'm not criticizing them for not being able to give us a straight dope because someone forced them into a September deadline. No, sir. They set September as the time when they'd be able to evaluate the progress of this so-called surge. They used that date to buy time from the American public. A public, I might add, that's absolutely fed up with the stalling, and let's be real here, the outright lying and covering up by this administration as to the gravity of the situation in Iraq. We've heard them describe one rosy picture after another over the past few years since this debacle began, and they always seem to come up with another excuse for continuing this ill-begotten war of theirs. We've heard from all of them about the great strides we've made repairing their infrastructure, their water lines, their electrical grids, repairing their schools and their hospitals. And we've been inundated with that type of baloney for several years now. And time and again, we found it out to be nothing but Bush administration bullshit so as to keep the American public support for this new Vietnam we're involved in. And make no mistake, a modern day Vietnam is exactly what we're facing here. We did not leave Vietnam with our national honor intact, and we will not leave Iraq with it either. The world is wise to these imperialistic actions by those in our government that are seeking to gain power and fortune by taking over the Middle East. And that is what it's all about. It is about fortune. What absolutely mystifies me is the fact that the Junior Bush administration is still, at this late date, trying to spread the propaganda that everything will be all right in Iraq if we just listen to them. Trust us. Now, I defy you to give me one reason why we should trust them now. You know, you've got to wonder if they'll ever give it up. Will they ever realize that the American public just isn't, they're not buying their lies anymore? We've had it. Well, at least about 70% of us have had it. The other 26 to 30% who still willingly line up to get their daily dose of Bush droppings are still of a mind to believe anything their great leader says, their great decider. They still have faith that this man will somehow lead them out of the wilderness and that they'll be triumphant in the end with peace in the Middle East, American control of all the oil resources, the Iranians having been bombed back to the Stone Age with all of their insane neocon dreams having come true. But by now, I don't have to tell you that this nation is divided. We've got the 50% who never thought this adventure of juniors would be anything but a disaster. We've got the maybe 20% of the population who have now changed their minds, seeing the handwriting on the wall and realizing that it can come to no good whatsoever. And then, this is my favorite group, there's that 26 to 30% who will never get it because they're not mentally capable of getting it. And I don't know about you, but for me personally, it's time to understand that a civil discourse with that 30% or so is no longer possible. It's no longer reasonable to think that they can be convinced to accept the truth. It's time to just write them off. It's time to ignore them. Ignore them. And accept their carping for just what it is, absolute idiocy. I've taken a long time to reach this point, but I've decided that I will spend no more of my time trying to convince any of these people that are just hopelessly ignorant. I've engaged in debate and conversation with far too many of them over these past few years, and I finally realized that it is in fact true that you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. The Hannitys, the drug junkie Limbaughs, the Neil Bortzes, the Mike Savages, the Mike Gallaghers, the David Horowitzes, the Ann Coulter, Michelle Malkins, the Laura Ingrams, Tucker Carlson, Bill Bennett, Michael Reagans, Ollie North. All of these people are leading a band of idiots around by their noses, convincing them that black is white, white is black, up is down, and wrong is right. But it's convinced me that it is a good sociological study, though. We now know that about 30% of this population has to be kept away from the seats of power. 30% of the population should be kept from controlling the military, the government, anything that's important. In another time, some 70 years or so ago, we've seen what can happen when a minority of crazies gain power in a country. We've seen what a small group of powerful and charismatic people can do to a country. We've seen what can be the profound effect they can have on the entire world. You don't have to believe me. Thousands of books have been written about that shameful time in modern history when the hatred of a few transcended the good that humanity can do. When racism and jingoism and militarism take control of an entire population. And so you ask, am I comparing this modern era, 30% of Americans to those who tried to take control of Europe and then the world? Truthfully, yes, I am. They haven't gained as much control as those I described earlier because thinking people have kept them from it. But God help us if they ever do gain the power that they thirst for, because one of the saddest chapters in world history could happen again. Have to beware of people like that at all times. At all times. They always worry me. Let's pause for a break.
And now a message from the President of the United States, George W. Bush.
Good morning. This week something very significant happened. I thought up the key to victory in Iraq. And I'm going to enact this strategy in the coming weeks. And we'll wrap up this whole war maybe by as early as, say, the first week in August. The idea is this. We just send a few more troops. Maybe 20,000. It's that simple. The surge has been working so wonderful. Why not do it again? Imagine double the success of the surge strategy. You almost can't imagine how successful that would make us. I'm calling this bold new strategy the Surge. Now, some have suggested maybe the Surge Plus or the Surge 2, but I think it's simpler as just the Surge. It's cleaner. And we're going to have to implement this plan in the exact same way as we did the last Surge in order to ensure the same high level of victory. So, I take back what I said before. It might take longer. We'll give it 6 months and see how it works out. Because that's how long it took for the first surge to really blossom into the success that it is today. So in 6 months, if we want even more victory, we can surge again some more. I'm very pleased at this new idea. Being president is hard work mentally, but I believe I'm getting the hang of it. Thank you for listening, and God bless you.
From the Night Sound Studios, here's Charm City's very own, sassy and classy, Erica Richards.
Join us at Night Sounds every Saturday night at 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern for a unique musical experience. You'll hear featured segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications hosted by yours truly, Erica Richards. Oh, by the way, the contact email information that we gave out during our debut is not in effect. So, to request a dedication, please contact Erica Richards at billyshearsmusic.com. That's Erica with a K, and Shears, Shears. To reach Billy Shears, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. We'll be waiting for you this Saturday evening.
My strange nation has ocean on two sides and the Bama crimson tide in the south, tilted slightly toward the north. The immigrants pour forth seeking Phoenix and life hand to mouth. My strange nation tilts sharply to the right, with our leaders straight and white as our teeth. Our population's mixed, but our election's fixed in my strange nation, America. My strange nation, built on the backs of slaves who were sailed here across the waves from far away. This cruel experiment was ended by a president who was both a Republican and gay. My strange nation gave the Indians our germs. They surrendered on our terms, as in died. Their survivors filed appeals, so we gave them roulette wheels in my strange nation, America. But my strange nation has lost its mind again, sending young women and men off to war that aren't clear, unless you're standing near to the rich and the righteous and the bored. And my strange nation, enamored of the cross, and who will win the toss of the coin, the circus and the bread, distract us from the dead in my strange nation, America. But my strange nation will surely come around, for you cannot hold us down for long. We'll sputter and we'll cough and throw the despots off. This land, for its mountains and its lakes, tornadoes and earthquakes, for its poets and pioneers, for its fetishes and fears, for its freedom of dissent, for its greasy government. And I will not change the stand.
Ah, yes. You're listening to The Guy James Show on the Head on Radio Nation Network. My Strange Nation. I do love that song. Reminds me of what the nation should be, what it was, what it can be again. Been invaded by the official Guy James Show Yorkies. Kukla and Sophie have entered the studio, looking mischievous and cute as ever. They are all of that. Oh, my. Got a soft spot for those two. Our friend John reminded me of when I was talking earlier in the program about Michael Vick, that it was Robert Byrd that said that about the hottest places in hell being reserved for people that abuse animals. Hate that story about Michael Vick. I just hate it. Hate it. Oh, my. I got an email during the break while we stopped there for a minute to check my email, and got a break from somebody who says, don't you know we love John Conyers, and they had no right to treat him that way. Well, you know what? I like John Conyers, too. I do. But why does that make him immune from accountability to the people? Why does that give him a license to go ahead and say he's going to do one thing and do another? Isn't that just the trouble that we have with the Congress of the United States? Isn't that just the trouble we have with almost all of the politicians? That they feel that they can do what they want to do with impunity, without regard for what the public thinks whatsoever. Isn't that just the problem we have in this country today? Yes, my congressman's good. The one I like is really good. It's that other guy is bad. No. There are some congressmen, some House members and senators that I like very much. But when they don't execute the will of the people, then they have to be told about it. John Conyers, I don't care who. They have to be told about it. They have to be reminded who they work for. And so, do I think that the people yesterday, Cindy Sheehan and Ray McGovern and David Swanson and that whole group, do I think they had a right to go to John Conyers' office and say what they did? Yes, hell yes. They had every right and they should do it again. They should visit every one of the congressmen, particularly the ones that went out and campaigned on impeachment of this rotten administration, and then said it was off the table. And as much as I like John Conyers and all that he's done over the years, he's been more vociferous on that point than anybody I can think of. He was more outspoken about impeachment than anybody before the election last November, and then afterwards was off the table. So do I think that we have a right to treat John Conyers that way? Absolutely. He's a big boy, and he could take it, and he should take it, because he knows what he has done, or not done in this case. As David brought up, Conyers' wife is on the Detroit City Council and introduced a resolution to impeach George W. Bush. What must it be like sitting around the kitchen table at that house in the evening? Talk about duplicity out of a... Oh, man. So, no, I don't hate John Conyers. And no, I don't have a particular axe to grind with John Conyers. But it's time to put up or shut up. You don't go to a rally like he did here recently, like David mentioned, and say, yeah, we got to get rid of these guys, and then say, no, impeachment's off the table, and we're not going to do that. You don't do that. I've said for many years that one of the biggest troubles we have in politics is the gray areas. And anybody that knows me very well knows that I'm not good at gray. It's black or it's white. There's very little in the middle. I like that, very little in the middle. Anyway, that's the way I live. That's me. I don't believe in some of the compromises that these politicians engage in. It's either right or it's wrong. Sometimes there's room for a little bit of gray, but not the kind of gray that we're talking about amongst these people. So, to answer that email, yes, I'm glad that they said what they said to John Conyers. I'm glad they had the heated exchange with him. I think they ought to do it again. If I were there, I would most certainly participate in it, because there must be pressure from the people. There must be. And the day that there isn't is the day that these people know that they can do any damn thing they want to with the American public, just like the junior Bush administration is doing now. The Bush administration realized a long time ago that they can get away with anything and everything, because they just know they're not going to be held accountable by this Congress, and they're not going to be held accountable. They don't have to be held accountable since they're not running for office again. They don't have to be, and nor will they be held accountable by the American public. They're home free to do any damn thing they please, and they are doing so. I thought that they were arrogant in the first 4 years of their administration, but I could never have dreamed of the amount of arrogance that they would display being a lame duck administration. Could never have dreamed it. Had no idea they would go this far. Yes, I never trust them. Yes, I always thought they were no good. But never thought they would try and get away with this executive privilege thing they're trying to do right now, claiming that the courts don't have any jurisdiction over them, that the Justice Department... It's astonishing. It really is. Oh, my. Hey, I didn't want the whole show to go by without mentioning something John Kerry said yesterday, and I thought this was just absolutely delightful. I get a little tired of the my good friend and my esteemed colleague and all that crap on the Senate floor and the House floor. I get really tired of that. There's less of it on the House floor than there is the Senate. The House is much more irreverent than is the Senate. My good friend, my colleague, yes. As Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee fundraiser on Nantucket last weekend, John Kerry recited a five-line limerick that takes aim at the conservative Republican Senator David Bitter, Republican of Louisiana, who's at the center of a sex scandal. Yes, a Republican in a sex scandal. I said that, yes. Hard to believe, isn't it? How many more do you want me to mention? A Democratic aide close to Kerry has confirmed to ABC News that he said, and let me quote, John Kerry said this now, "There once was a man named Vitter who vowed that he wasn't a quitter. But with stories of women and all of his sinning, he knows his career's in the, oh, never mind," end quote. A Democratic aide in attendance at the fundraiser told ABC News that Kerry's joke went over well and that the whole room was in stitches. Well, bully for you, John Kerry. I liked it too. An important day in the lives of approximately 628,000 Americans today. 628,000 Americans, it is figured, will benefit by a 70-cent an hour raise today, the minimum wage being raised today from $5.15 an hour to $5.85. So it's going to increase to 2-point-something million 2 summers from now when it finally reaches the upper plateau. But 628,000 Americans today got a 70-cent an hour raise, and I hope it's meaningful in their lives. This ends the longest period without an increase since the federal minimum wage was established in 1938. Not only did it go up and not go up for all that time, their spending power went down by 20%. Tell me what kind of a leaky boat that puts a person in. Well, hey, it's was one of those days I didn't know what the show was going to be or how it was going to go, but I'm happy with it. I really am. I'm happy with your participation and our guest, and it just was felt like a good show today, and I'm thankful for that. I do want to remind you, it is a listener-supported program. I don't think anybody's hearing me, except for those of you who already, and I thank you, already helped the program. TheGuyJamesShow.com. Throw a nickel in the drum, will you? Hey, that's all we got today here on The Guy James Show, part of the Head On Radio Network. Thanks to Billy Shears for the great music today. And don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you tomorrow, gang.